For over a century, the medium of radio has created a unique intimacy between broadcasters and their audience like no other art form. Echoing and celebrating the changing face of popular culture, radio stars occupy a certain space in the story of entertainment. In this series, some of Britain's most recognisable voices reflect on their own relationship with the original content creator. So, join us as we celebrate the power and magic of radio exclusively on Beyond the Title.
Presenter and broadcaster Harriet Scott is known by millions as the voice of the award-winning Magic Radio Breakfast Show alongside her radio husband Ronan Keating, a role which she's honoured since 2017. Yet her career has ascended the ranks of broadcasting, beginning at BBC Radio Humberside, then Viking Radio. In 2002, she joined Heart as a co-presenter of Heart Breakfast on Heart London alongside Jonathan Coleman, who was replaced in 2005 by Jamie Theakston. And together they won a Sony Radio Silver Award for Best Entertainment Show and Radio Presenters of the Year at the Arqiva Commercial Radio Awards. In 2012, she made her debut on BBC London amongst a formidable lineup of talent, including Gabby Roslin, Joanne Good and Vanessa Veltz. Covering for Annika Rice on the Saturday morning show gave Harriet a taste of national radio as she became part of the Radio 2 family. I caught up with one of the biggest voices in radio to talk broadcasting, the magic secrets behind a great radio show and her recollections on a lifetime on the airwaves. Ladies and gentlemen, Harriet Scott. Of course, we'll get on to the major highlights of your career in a moment, but as this is part of the radio season, I wanted to know how you deal with the responsibility of getting up every morning and being expected to entertain the nation. How important is it to create the intimacy with your audience?
Well, it's very important to create the intimacy. In terms of responsibility of getting up in the morning, I'm lucky I'm quite a morning person, and I've done a lot of breakfast radio, and I'm kind of used to that mentality. As even when the alarm goes off, even if then you're lying there thinking, oh God, really? I can't equate this person lying here in bed with the person that's then going to feel up for it on the radio. But even the process of getting ready and getting to a studio, by the time you're in the studio, you're just mentally ready. And it's an overused phrase, but it's my happy place. I feel very happy in the studio, very relaxed, got a lovely team. So, I think that's that, you know, that I enjoy that part. I don't mind getting up in the morning. And in terms of creating intimacy, I think that's where radio is just amazing, really, because you could be doing anything with your morning, going about your business, and you can just take us with you, especially now. Well, you know, people are listening on their phones. People are listening everywhere. It doesn't matter how you listen and where you listen.
Hmm. Yeah. So beginning your career at BBC Radio Humberside, I believe, how do you think local radio is able to engage with communities in a way that the national radio stations can't?
Good question. Well, and there's also BBC and commercial, which is obviously two different beasts completely, in that BBC don't have to worry about necessarily listening figures. I know they do a little, but they don't in terms of advertisers, and they don't in terms of, I don't know, always moving things on quite quickly or throwing forward to other things. So I think that BBC local radio can serve local communities really, really well by just taking the time to engage with the local things that matter. That's not to say that commercial radio can't engage locally. And I think that in certain instances, it does that absolutely brilliantly. There's a number of Bauer stations I can think of, just even like in Scotland, that manage that really, really well. And in the Northeast and all over the country. But I think that the BBC just naturally has more time and more resources to do that.
Yeah. You mentioned the commercial radio stuff there. 2002, you joined commercial radio station Heart. Yes. At a mainstream commercial station with a variety of competitions, chart promotions and exclusive segments with the biggest pop stars of the day. How much opportunity is there for you to put your own stamp on the show?
I think there's a lot of opportunity because, yes, these stations are big beasts with, certainly if you're on a breakfast show, a bigger budget, and that, you know, they want to get the stars in, and as you say, in competitions and big competitions, but it's it's your voice and it's your personality that's leading people through it. So I think that there is definitely the chance to sort of make it your own, no matter what's going on. And I think that that's an important thing to remember as a presenter. It's sometimes it's easy to get a little bit overawed by big name guests or giving away £100,000, and that's all amazing. But ultimately, it comes down to a connection with your audience.
Yeah. Jamie Theakston joined Heart in 2005, fresh from presenting the weekend morning show on Radio 1. How difficult is it to dual present with someone as opposed to being solo? And how did that experience of non-commercial radio help to give the show more of a rounded image?
Very good questions, Josh. Well, I can't speak for Jamie in terms of how he felt, but I think Jamie's an excellent broadcaster. So, sorry, the first part. You're talking about doing maybe a double header.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, like a number of times now where you are very often thrown together with somebody that you don't know if it's going to work, but hopefully the two of you have enough experience as broadcasters and are decent enough people that, you know, that it does work. And I loved working with Jamie. It's great. Up until then, I had done quite a few years solo presenting, and I like that too. In some ways, it's nice to have complete control, if you will, over how it's going to go or ideas for the show. But I'm really, really also enjoy working in a team. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Obviously, that partnership with Jamie resulted in both of you being the recipients of the Sony Radio Silver Award for Best Entertainment Show and also Radio Presenters of the Year at the Arqiva Commercial Radio Awards. In what ways did that cement your status of one of Britain's best loved broadcasters?
Also, previous to that, I was with John O'Coleman, and we won gold at the Sonys for best. Yeah. I think, listen, it's nice to win awards, obviously. I think, you know, people can always say, oh, it's not about the awards. And it is not about the awards, but it is nice to be nominated within the industry by your peers for things like that. It doesn't always equate in listening figures. So listening figures, you know, are arguably more important than awards. But sure, it's nice to have them. And I still have the minor on my shelf downstairs.
Yeah. Okay. In 2012, you joined BBC Radio London. For anyone outside the London area, it's a difficult concept to get your head around because although it's still considered a local radio station, its power and reach is massive. How did you view your role there? And surrounded by exciting talents such as Gabby Roslin, Joanne Good and Paul Ross, what were they able to teach you about the art of broadcasting?
God, so much. They were really, really formative years for me. So I had spent 10 years at Heart. And then before that, I mean, God, I've been in radio forever and really predominantly commercial radio. And I left commercial radio. And I remember going for a chat with the then boss of BBC London. And he said, look, OK, we know you can do commercial radio and you can be up and perky in the morning. But how would you feel about filling 2 hours with no adverts, possibly no callers and just keeping going? And because I wanted the job, I was like, yeah, fine. But I was terrified, absolutely terrified. And rightly so, because I think it is a really special skill to learn to keep going and be interesting. And I learned so much. And Vanessa Feltz was there at the time. I learned so much from her. And I worked with Paul Ross a little bit and Joanne Good. So I used to cover for Joanne Good sometimes in the afternoons and I'd do early breakfast. I thought that the team there were absolutely extraordinary and they still are. And so I learned an awful lot. It was a really, really steep learning curve about actually being very real, being very authentic, and the art of sort of keeping things going, diving deeper into things. I used to cover for Vanessa Feltz as well when she was off, and I mean it really terrified me because I think she's excellent.
Yeah. Josh said, how did you find enough to say?
Sometimes I didn't. Sometimes. Oh, God, there would certainly be a panic in my voice. And I, because also, you don't want to sound desperate and be like, oh, for God's sake, would someone please call me? How I would feel. But like I say, it was a steep learning curve and I did get better at it. And what I do feel now after that time, and that time, for example, covering for Vanessa Feltz and then dealing with breaking news, which could often be very political, I really believe that nothing frightens me now. I feel like I've been there, very exposed, with no adverts to hide behind, no music at many times. And so now I do feel like no matter what I've got to do now, I think, well, at least it's not that.
This led to a move to Radio 2 covering the Saturday breakfast for Annika Rice as well. What is the level of pressure like knowing that you are following in the footsteps of a broadcasting royalty who has spoken into the same microphone as you?
It's huge. And also, to work at Radio 2 was really, really exciting. So I'm just trying to think, was this alongside the time I was at BBC London? Probably. So, and it also goes back to that thing I think I was saying about don't get put off by big name guests or big competitions, because ultimately, just thought, take a deep breath. These are Radio 2 listeners who, I don't know, they're kind. They're not looking for a shock. They're not looking to knock you. They just want to hear you talk and be real. So I was very nervous. And I wanted to do a really good job because it was a big deal for me. But I just thought, well, just relax and be you. Just try and find you in amongst the nerves, which isn't always easy to do.
Mm. You're now one of the best loved voices on radio. And with the advent of social media, it's become almost part of the role of a broadcaster to appear universally accessible. Do you ever think that there'll be a time when broadcasters like yourself will be forced into abandoning social media?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I probably also don't do enough of it. I need to do more Twitter. I'm all right on Insta. But I don't think so. I think people have abandoned social media if they've got burnt by it. I think I'm quite wary of that. Perhaps that's why I do more Instagram than Twitter, because I don't, I don't post anything very polarizing, really, because I don't want to throw the towel and think, right, that's it, I'm coming off social media, because I think it is great and I think it can be a force for good, but equally I don't want to encourage a whole load of trolling.
Josh said, I suppose where you're on radio every day, those figures have always sort of had the people that almost feel like they know you already.
I suppose so. So, and I suppose with social media, I think, well, I have those 4 hours every morning to connect with people. And a lot of people who use social media don't have that. And whereas I do think it is nice to share extra bits of your day or maybe what you might have got up to later, I don't massively overshare, but I think sometimes people just share an awful lot, don't they, on social media? And yeah. I get to that point where people think, oh, for God's sake, I don't care what you had for dinner.
Yeah, probably. Looking back at your career, what's your proudest achievement?
No, really, I don't know. What is my proudest achievement? It may be as simple as still working in the industry that I really, really love. And still being inspired by it and feeling very lucky to be here. So, I mean, I was 16 when I started in hospital radio, and I knew I wanted to work in radio. So my proudest achievement is that I've got, for me, actually right now, I'm on Magic Breakfast with Ronan Keating, my favourite job ever. So to be able to say that at my grand old age, I'm just very grateful to still be working in an industry that I really enjoy, and to be able to get up in the morning and enjoy what you do, I don't underestimate that at all or take it for granted.
Yeah. So what's next for Harriet Scott?
To write the book I keep talking about, that, you know, one day I'm going to go and live by the sea and write fiction.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Josh asks, what does radio mean to you?
Oh, God. I just love listening to radio. I listen to all kinds of radio, all kinds of radio stations. It's the immediacy of it. It is the intimacy of it. It is, well, it's been my lifeline for, a long, long time, both personally and professionally. I mean, I would say this, I'm biased, but rather than sitting at home and just watching TV, you can take radio with you wherever you go and you can paint pictures in your head. And I just think it is like that friend on, you know, inside that little box or whatever. I just think it's really important. And, yeah, it means a lot to me.
Yeah.